Afternoon, everybody. Firstly, I'd like to thank the Commission for putting on the conference and also giving, in particular, my company a chance to have a say. I just noticed that my company's the only New Zealand telco that gets a word in. I guess that's because they've either got to listen to what we have to say or they're sick of everybody else chewing their ear off, not naming anybody in particular. Text. Normally, when you see my name on one of these conferences, the organisers put me up here for what's become known as a grenade effect, which will become blatantly obvious very shortly. Pretty much my presentation today is based on our views in the real world as an NGN operator. I'll try and make it interesting, but I'm also conscious of the fact that I'm one of two people between you and the bar. So in that case, we'll get on with it. There's bound to be something here to upset everybody. Topics of discussion today, fact or fiction surrounding NGN services, briefly touch on that, followed by the NGN building blocks, Voice 2.0, something you've heard a tiny bit about today, and then finishing off with the applications, real world applications that exist today. First of all, for those of you who don't know us, we're a Kiwi-owned telco that's been around since 96. We started out as a traditional telco and then migrated, morphed, I guess you'd call it, into an NGN provider in 2002, 2003. So we've pretty much been doing this for the last 5 or 6 years. Today we specialise in converged applications and IP services in the telco arena, right from the residential customer right through to the top end corporate. We switched $2 billion worth of carrier grade VoIP, $2 billion VoIP minutes, I'm sorry, which gives us a bit of street cred in this industry. Sorry, I was talking to the minister before. What we found now, which has become apparent in some next generation telcos or service providers around the world, we've become more of a software developer service provider than a traditional telco. And that's along the lines of the themes you've heard earlier on today. Thinking outside the square, just telcos changing their model. Speaking of our model, our plan is, or has been, that we utilise best of breed products. The main vendors, BroadSoft, Nextone, Cisco and Juniper, for varying parts of our network. We have a simple philosophy, all access networks are treated as plumbing, so we have no allegiances to any of the infrastructure providers and no chance of getting any of that government's money. We treat all the services as applications. I guess that's having come from a legacy telco model more into a software development model. It's easier to go down that path. You've heard it spoken about today, mashups, Web 2.0, etc. I'll touch a bit on that as we go through. We maximise our in-house software design capabilities, again using the merge of the technologies. And our goal is to give our customers complete control of their services right from when they order it through to provisioning, billing, ordering extra services, right through the whole life cycle. It reduces resources, keeps a happy customer. Brief refresher on NGN for those that have forgotten a few of the points made this morning. Pretty much there's no choice. All telcos and service providers dealing in this industry are going to go to it or they're going to die. It's that simple. Predominantly cores made up of IP, packet-based, quality of service, all that good technical stuff you heard a bit about this morning. I won't bore you with the details. The network elements fall predominantly into two categories, soft switches on the voice side and IMS platforms for the interactive media, etc. Facilitates the one-stop shop that allows customers to do, as I say, everything, right from ordering, billing, provisioning, all in a single portal. As with any new technology, there's a few myths. This is where I'm going to upset a few people. Ernie, take notes. There's clearly some untruths about the technology based on, I guess, sideline commentary, etc. And remember, we're coming at this from a point of view of having done it for the last 6 years. There is way too much focus on the access mechanisms. There is almost no focus on the applications. And listening to the speakers today and the questions today, this room must be divided almost 50-50. Those in favour of talking about fibre and those in favour of talking about the applications that enable the usage. Hopefully I'll try and pull those together shortly. The Castalia report, which has had a few mentions today, if you haven't read it, I thoroughly recommend that you do. As I say, I'm not a Telecom, Telstra or Vodafone, and I have no interest in access infrastructure. That report, in our view, is the single most accurate document defining the future of New Zealand as far as the options. And hopefully the government will take that into consideration as well. First myth for NGN, he who dies with the most network wins. Not so much. While access networks are clearly an important part of NGN, they don't actually translate to end users. The customers, by and large, are interested in the applications and don't give a toss, to be honest, about who's giving them their access. It could be a direct sold line from Telecom, it could be a resold line through an ISP, it could be anything from one of the local infrastructure guys. It's the services that they focus on. Our view, it's all about communications convergence and presence management. Another myth of NGN requires FTTX technologies to operate. Not true. Actual application bandwidth usage, and these figures are taken from services that we have operated ourselves in New Zealand over the current infrastructure that quite often gets a kicking from different parts of the industry. Gaming, of course, email, all the standard applications run at line speed. There's no real issue there. A voice call, which is PSTN replacement, bearing in mind that in the next few years, copper lines for analog voice are going to disappear, and whether you like it or not, you are going to have a voice over IP line as your primary line. 40 kilobits. 90 kilobits is more than likely going to be the standard to support faxes. That's 90 kilobits a second to support one voice line. Streaming audio, downloading your streaming media, etc., for your radio online, 128K. Personal video conferencing. So if we can find Donald's grandmother, the video conferencing between her and a doctor, 200K, that'll work. Works now. Streaming video over IP, slightly higher resolution, using MPEG-4/H.264, about 350K. You can run 10 concurrent voice calls with voice and or fax calls on less than a meg synchronous service. You can run 25 calls using a slightly different codec over a 1 meg pipe. These are simultaneous calls to the residents. Streaming movies over IP. Sure, you get high def, and I wish I had one of those nanotechnology services that a friend from Rianne's was talking about, and I'll talk to him later about that, putting one into my lounge. But until then, video over DSL, you can run at 4.5 meg, we've done it. And I don't think there's too much debate about that. It just depends on what you perceive as the quality of the picture you want. All of this can be delivered over XDSL technology today, and that's a fact, we're doing it. 90% of all telecoms DSL lines by 2012 are guaranteed to support between 10 and 20 meg of bandwidth download with a minimum of a 1 meg upload. This is going to happen whether telecom likes it or not. There are also at least three other providers of LLU who are putting in the same or better spec. So if you combine that, you get an idea of what sort of percentage of coverage you're going to have in the country over the next couple of years before we even consider the government investment. Begs the question. What else do residential customers want to run? We've heard a lot today about things that are going to be built in the future, things that may be built in the future, bandwidth is king, et cetera, et cetera. We do this for a living. We can't see any technologies down the path that 95% of it can't be serviced by DSL technologies. Myth number three, $1.5 billion on a nationwide fibre to the home rollout is the answer. That's where I'm really going to get a slap later. Must have been a hell of a question. As we've heard from some people, and going down to the comment gentleman over here had before, the access is not the bottleneck. Those of you that are in this industry know that damn well. International bandwidth costs is the number one thing that is stopping the uptake of broadband in New Zealand. That cost is flowing through to the ISPs, and I'll show you a working model of it later on. National backhaul costs, probably the next most important bottleneck. Then you get into something that unless you've actually been playing in fibre to the home, you don't consider. Home wiring. That is another bottleneck. What is the point in having a 100 meg pipe to your house and your ISP when these three other things are in the pathway? You're not going to get anywhere near what you think you're going to get. DSL variants right now today support, based on our experience, 98% of every residential and small to medium enterprise requirement. Bearing in mind that that's the PSTN replacement service as well. It's our belief the government needs to define the outcomes, exactly what they're trying to achieve by fibre to the home, rather than start with the access technology. And I think that's a view shared by quite a few people in this room. So hopefully the minister will get a chance to review these later on, add it to his list. We're not saying that fibre to the premises or some sort of FTTX technology shouldn't be used. I think it's a no-brainer and everybody would agree. Schools, hospitals, small businesses, etc., etc. And for the pilot program we're running at the moment, all new subdivisions. That's already happening today. So we're not anti-fibre, we're perhaps just spending that much money on a problem that we believe doesn't necessarily exist today. Technology neutrality should be included in any decision the government makes to service the rest of New Zealand. Something that's cropped up, I think, only once today, servicing the rural networks. That, in our view, is one of the largest social policy type decisions we believe the government should be focusing on. Because even with fibre to the home, the rural community is not going to get fibre. There are some regional initiatives doing it. Most of them are done on a business case model. Myth number four, telcos and ISPs make money out of broadband. Bollocks. There is absolutely no money in broadband-only services. I don't care where you sit on the scheme, whether you own the infrastructure, whether you're leasing it off somebody else, etc., etc. Customers expect everything louder than everything else. They don't want to pay for it. It's that simple. The market in New Zealand's been collapsed to such a point that if you look at the price points now compared to 3 years ago, it was around about $2,000, which was way expensive, by the way, for a commercial DSL line. It's now something like $35 to $40. It's collapsed too far too quick, and then the rest of us, both the tier ones and tier twos, are trying to find out how to make money in there and still provide services. International bandwidth, you want a real world example. On average, $250 to $300 per meg. Again, to the question over here this morning. This is why you don't see all-you-can-eat ISP services these days. You run an ISP at roughly 25 to 1 contention ratio over DSL, that adds roughly an extra $10 onto the cost of a service provider. When you take into account the known LLU costs, whether you're with one of the three, maybe four bitstream wholesalers, put it all together, you'll find that some of us are actually selling it at a loss, which is no fun. Calculation gets worse, you start looking at fibre to the home. And I use 30 meg, you'll see why shortly. If you run 30 meg to a house and run 10 to 1 ratio for customers, each customer costs you $750 a month to give them 3 meg of that 30 meg of international access. The economics just don't stack up, that's reality. Costs are just way too high. Fibre to the home, something that is near and dear to our heart for the simple reason that we are the only telco in New Zealand that is running fibre, real life services, next generation services over fibre to the home. There are certainly some regional initiatives that do it. Most of these are proactive infrastructure providers that have had to go and take these initiatives themselves. One of them is Pacific.net down in South Island, but they're not telcos that are achieving fibre to the home. We went for a tender in October, well, actually Telecom went to tender in October 2007 for somebody to partner with them for the new subdivisions that they weren't laying copper to. My company won the tender, and since then we've been rolling out services, predominantly voice and internet services, to the new subdivisions as they come online. We currently have six of them nationwide. They use a hybrid of Telecom's GPON network for the local access and their NGN for backhaul. Pretty much, I guess, that gives us a street cred. We're playing the game, so we feel that we're in a position to comment the reality of what is happening with fibre to the home and next generation services. Because we're the only blokes doing it, everybody else is sitting on the sideline. So we like to think our voices get thrown into the equation. Pretty much we're qualified to stand on the soapbox, in other words. Fibre to the home, clearly there's some pros. First one, future-proof access type, no one's debating that. Synchronous speeds, perfect. Capable of large bandwidth delivery, outstanding. Pilot, when we did it, included VoIP, internet, security systems, IPTV, you name it, we've done it over the pilot. The cons, however, and this is from a real world, from the year of doing this, as I say, it's not the bottleneck. It is expensive infrastructure. The backhaul requirements are huge. Obviously, the more access you give to the customer, the worse the model is. It means you have to charge a premium rate for what they take for granted. Not necessary for triple or quad plays. Customers don't want to pay for it. Every application and service in the pilot that we have done over the last year, we've also run over ADSL 2+ and higher technologies. The facts on fibre to the home, and this is from a player that is doing it in New Zealand in the current environment. 68% of the customers that we have on there run a profile, with availability of 30 meg down, 6 meg up, use it for phone-only services. That's almost 7 out of every 10 have got fibre to the home and are using less than 100k of bandwidth. Right, now these are real world stats. This is not the theory you can talk about, take up rate, etc. These are customers who are paying for these. The average data usage is less than 3 gig a month. Right? Ironically, those of you that have read the Castalia report, these stats are fairly close to what were put in there as the theoretical guesstimate of what was going to happen. That'll provoke a few questions in the bar later, I'm sure. In our view, the government needs to consider these real-world stats from the only live pilots in the country as they make their decision, and hopefully they will. Moving on to the NGN building blocks, pretty much as we sit as a service provider in the NGN world, there's network infrastructure, IP interconnect, and the applications and services. Now that's oversimplifying things, but in light of the time between now and beers, it's probably as good as it should be. For the network infrastructure, go through a couple of the technologies quickly. XDSL, as I say, greater than 10 meg by 2012 across the country. That's before any of the other access providers get in there. It is going to be the replacement for the PSDN access, either via MSAN technology or via CPE that's VoIP enabled. LOU facility providers doing the same thing at a certain degree. Wireless, probably not talked about too much today, but is going to play a big part of it. Currently, recent times there's been examples of really badly implemented networks, and now not so bad ones. Generally limited in bandwidth, but doesn't restrict applications. Obviously, you've got your technologies, 3G, 3.5, LTE, WiMAX, Wi-Fi, etc., different variants, don't forget satellite. Fibre to the curb, fibre to the premise, whatever you want to call it, fibre to the cabinet. It's available in the main centres, used primarily by large campus-based customers or large corporates, etc., and it's already open access. So contrary to popular belief, I guess you'd have to class telecom wholesale's network in the current world as open access, same as you get the regional providers, the light ups of the world, the vectors and the city links, etc. Fibre to the home. As I said, certainly for new subdivisions contracting through telecom, our partner in this, it is going to be the access for it. During the pilot test bed, the things that need to be discussed, which haven't been brought up in any other forum, such as what happens if there's no power and the service stops, emergency services, structured cabling in the house, all of this has been done under the pilot. So we have evidence, we know what we have to do to get the model done to work on a nationwide nationwide standards, etc. IP interconnect, very important. In fact, look forward to our guest down here tomorrow and his presentation of it. Broken into two parts really, technical specifications. There is no single standard for IP interconnect yet. Hopefully I'm not stealing too much of your thunder for tomorrow. Interoperability issues are a major roadblock. It's also quite hard to say twice in a row. It's mentioned before, there is an IP interconnect working party under the TCF that is devising standards for New Zealand. After consulting what we've been looking at around the world, we are, make you quite happy David, they are looking at New Zealand based standards to get on and get it done. What it must do is interconnect between next generation telcos and their networks must take priority over any of the applications across different networks. In other words, government initiatives that are looking at services between two or more carriers need to take a back seat until the IP interconnect standards are defined. Otherwise you get the cart driving the horse. Commercial agreements, fairly important. We're telcos after all. Some of us have been telcos for a while. Some of us have got a lot to lose under a bill and keep environment. Essentially the concept being treat all packets the same. It's just the way networks have evolved around the world, where 1 meg of internet peering traffic is not charged for, yet 1 meg of traffic carrying VoIP services via a telco is charged for. Makes it very complicated. I'm sure we'll hear more about that tomorrow. In New Zealand, a fact that a lot of people don't know, almost all of the tier twos in New Zealand, i.e. those that aren't Telecom, Telstra or Voda, and are interconnected to each other, are already running a bill and keep model, meaning that we terminate traffic originating from each other's network to our own number ranges at nil by charge. And that is a long way towards implementing an industry-wide commercial arrangement, eventually it will flow through to the end user. I put a question mark up here just before because I thought we were close to being the first in the world to pretty much embrace it, but I understand Peru's getting a bit closer, perhaps. But essentially, other jurisdictions have gone down this path of not having bill and keep for IP interconnect, and it's so convoluted, and it's fair to say that they're now busily trying to undo that. We're lucky because for whatever reason we've skipped a generation of technology, we can go and get it done right properly. Applications and services. We use a Broadworks platform, predominantly for our VoIP services. It's the world's leading provider of VoIP software architecture for telcos. They've got 7 million lines deployed, 300 plus service providers and telcos around the world use it, including 8 of the top 10. 5 New Zealand telcos have BroadSoft platforms in their network. What that means is we have the capability for Web 2.0 and Voice 2.0 applications there. It's just how we execute it. We've had a lot of talk about mashups recently. BroadSoft themselves ran a global competition late last year, which asked all of their, in fact, they opened it to everyone. Every developer in the world could have entered, including their telco partners. And they were asked to go out and build applications that combine real-world requirements on the web for Web 2.0 applications with the functionality of their APIs on the BroadSoft platform. In other words, here was a vendor that, unlike the traditional model of making it proprietary and you pay them $1 million and they might let you get access to their front door, these guys had opened it up. Two of our developers actually entered the competition with about 2 weeks to spare. The competition, I think, was running over 2 months. And came in the final 6 of the world. In fact, one of them came 2nd in the world for developing applications on this. It was a fair bet he was going to get beaten because it was a 911 Homeland Security application that beat him, and it was judged by an American panel. as far as I'm concerned, he should have won. ironically, out of that, we were essentially the only telco that entered it. So what they told us was that on the one hand you've got telcos with Voice 2.0 platforms and capabilities, etc., but all the development they're waiting out for in a completely different community. So here we were as a telco with their own in-house development team building applications. So that gave us a bit of encouragement going forward. Voice 2.0, which formed a major part of it, it's essentially a collective term for communication technologies all clumped together that gives the consumers direct access for their applications. Similar to what you get for YouTube, Facebook, etc. We have some examples of it. The main ones, fixed to mobile convergence, voice video data convergence, presence management, user portal, and click to call. These are some scenarios that we have as live applications today. Fixed to mobile. Mobile operators won't want to hear this. You don't need to own a fixed or a mobile network to have fixed to mobile convergence. You can already offer seamless handover between the technologies. Admittedly for a price that hopefully will go down soon, allows for single number contact. User can have a single number contact with full IN features on it. In New Zealand, we actually have a number range ready for this called a personal number range. An example of this is having a BroadSoft platform at the back end, putting a VoIP soft client on an Apple iPhone. You can seamlessly translate calls real time without the person making the call knowing between fixed and mobile. Voice video data, known as triple or quad play, or if you're from Canterbury, it's normally known as four play. single access type carries multiple services, not really rocket science. One-stop shop again, ordering, billing, provisioning, online portal that facilitates control of the services, etc. Example of this is the fibre to the home. This is exactly the model that we've run out in the subdivisions. Presence management. Completely changes the traditional model. This is where a person can be anywhere and contacted by one point. Basically centralises the control of multiple contact mediums, allows you to do rules-based decision making, and the customer can also control their DR requirements. An example of this is the Auckland Rescue Helicopter Trust, who have our services in there, these such services in there, both for their call centre and for the rescue helicopter. And if there's any local, regional or national government people in here at the moment, feel free to subsidise the helicopter. It's a valuable service and it could do with a bit more money. Because one day it might be saving you in Auckland. User portal. Generally, our end users use this. It's got additional services that can be purchased and added on. Facilitates and controls their services anywhere in the world. Results in customer loyalty that's real-time, global, online, etc., etc. Example for this, the boys in black. For the last couple of years, the All Blacks have been using our services as they go around the world. After a hard day at the office, kicking the crap out of the Poms or the Wallabies or the, sorry David, on the odd chance the Springboks, when they retire back to the hotel, they can pick up a phone, dial a 7-digit New Zealand number, and they can connect to wives, girlfriends, etc. They found it as a very useful tool, so much so that the ABs that have left and gone on a sabbatical or left to go through to Europe and play rugby have signed up themselves individually and taken these applications over there. Click to dial. One line of code can be added to any website and you can get click to dial. It can be used as either generated inbound contact, customer signs up for your service, click to dial comes through to your call centre, or alternatively your internal call centre people can click to dial to click out to the customer from CRM. Works on all available web-enabled devices. Simple but very effective. Example of this, we have a VFX manager. For those of you that are our customer, you can go online and see the CDRs, etc. You can see Grandma's CDR, get them to Donald. You can right click on that, etc., and it just rings the call initiated from the website. So how do we make it all pay? Well, on the one hand, I'm not going to tell my competitors most of our secrets, but there are some observations that if, as experienced as a telco, we believe we could pass on. As I say, the focus more on the services than the applications, than the infrastructure. Implement industry-wide IP interconnect. That's the first pan-industry step we believe should be taken. Invest in smart people, no-brainer. Embrace the voice and the Web 2.0 integration. Don't outsource your software development for the applications. And eventually what we believe will happen is migrate converged service, telco services to subscription-based models. Now obviously there's a lot that has to be done to the cost model underneath that in order for that to happen. It's our view that that's the future. Think outside the square. Thank you very much. Thank you.